Sponsorship of the KQED live audio stream comes from Xfinity Mobile, featuring customized wireless plans. Customers can choose unlimited, buy the gig, shared data, or a mix of both and switch it up anytime. Learn more at xfinitymobile.com.
The question I know you've addressed to some degree, especially in press conferences, but I want to make sure I understand for this story. What was the breaking point? What turned the situation so that you couldn't live with the camp anymore on October 25th? What decided it for you?
Well, there's been a lot of sort of the Wall Street Journal sort of said, well, these so-called mayors are now getting what they deserve, right, that they supported the 99% movement, and now they have to live with the encampments. And I have to tell you, I'm an old civil rights activist. I worked for unions at one time. I'm the first woman and the first Asian-American mayor of the city. Mm-hmm. So that says something about who I am in my past. And when the encampment first started, people said, how long should it stay? And I said, let's see how it grows. And in the beginning, it was relatively small, and it was very peaceful. But by the second week, we were beginning to hear very disturbing things, and we were asking the encampment to meet with us and to take certain actions. The first things that really started to catch my attention is we started getting calls for the police and for 911 almost every night. And
so calls from the camp.
From the camp. So what I noticed beginning the second week is we started getting calls from the encampment for 911 calls and for the police. We had sexual assaults reported. We had a woman who fell out of a tree, and the encampment wouldn't let us get close to her. In fact, they dragged her out to the sidewalk. She could have had really bad head or neck injuries. Then we had continuation of that. There was a person who had a heart attack. They wouldn't let our paramedics in. And then what really did it for me is that to control a violent man in the camp, they hit him over the head with a 2x4. And the next morning, they were in the hospitals and at the morgue to see if they'd killed them. And, you know, we wouldn't have known about it, quite frankly, if we hadn't gotten the reports from the hospitals and the morgue that the people from the encampment were looking to see if they killed somebody. And that was really the last straw, that I felt that they weren't willing to work with us. They were stopping police and firefighters from getting in who do our 911 services, that they couldn't maintain the peace, and that there were violent incidents happening within the camp.
So that decided it for you, that.
It really was the safety issue. And even recently, as of last night, we had two fires that the fire department had to respond to, and we had another 911 call where the paramedics felt that they had to have the police to let them in.
Let me ask you then the question everyone's asking in Oakland. Given that reason, why are they back?
I think there's this sort of illusion that I let him back, but the reality is you couldn't have hundreds of cops surrounding the park every day, and people are back. And I think what I'm trying to develop now is more of a discussion within the camp and with the community.
But I want to hear about that, but let me make sure I understand. They're here against your will then.
We have never said that it's okay to camp. We have always said that this park is unique because it is the heart of the community, that you can be here from 6 o'clock in the morning to 10 o'clock at night.
But even tents during the day, you could conceivably, under city ordinances, get rid of those as they were being set up, couldn't you? It wouldn't take hundreds of police officers, would it?
It depends on how many people are and how tense the situation is, right? And so, no. Obviously, we want the encampment gone. Like some mayors, I would even consider some movement. But the reality is the encampment itself has first these whole issues around violence and safety within the camp at night in particular, because that's when we're getting the 911 calls. And we've been keeping a running log of these calls. We're getting them from the encampment, mm-hmm. right? Secondly, the economic impact on downtown. This is, you know, Oakland is probably the poorest of the big Bay Area cities. We're at unique city. On one hand, I have more PhDs than most cities in the country. On the other hand, I have the highest unemployment and the highest poverty rate. So it's a very diverse city. And when we have to spend $1 million in police downtown, that's $1 million of police that's not getting out into the neighborhoods, and I have one of the highest murder rates in the country, and we've begun to bring down that murder rate by putting more police officers in the 100 blocks where we have the most violence. And when I have to pull cops off from the neighborhood, then that hurts the community. If you add to that the economic damage to the restaurants and the small businesses, and now because of the disruption, some businesses saying that even though they love the vibrancy and the great public transportation, that they're thinking of moving. And that means real jobs for a city like ours, and we can't afford that. We can't afford to lose even one job.
Well, and I certainly, you know, the arguments about the effect this is having on downtown commerce are clear and I think easy to understand. So I guess the question is now, you want them gone. You got rid of them once. They came back. You didn't fight them on it. What next?
I think we're trying to get more people involved in the conversation because I think that a lot of people in Oakland and around the country support the movement against Wall Street, and they support the 99% movement. But I think that's different from the encampment. People are just beginning to see that. So I'm hoping to involve more of the community in this discussion. And I'm also trying to educate the encampment. I think we're watching their tweets. They're beginning to discuss that, whether or not being here really is helping their cause or hurting their cause. I think there has to be dialogue. And so, you know, I was pretty clear today, once again repeating, as I have throughout the weeks, that I want to be able to have a conversation with representatives of the camp.
Well, let me ask you about that. What's it like trying to talk to them right now, just in real practical terms? You walking down there, you calling somebody, what happens? Because they say, we never see the mayor.
They don't always recognize me. I've been down there. I walk. You know, this is my city. There's no place in Oakland that I'm afraid to walk. I'm mostly listening. I've been in a listening mode. So we tweet them. There was this incident that happened about a week ago, a week and a half ago, right after I'd come back from Washington, and I tried to talk to the encampment. And although most of the people were saying, let her speak, a small group was screaming in my face and didn't want to let me speak. And I had signed up to speak in open forum in the afternoon, and then they canceled it. And then I was told I could stand in line that evening and speak. So I
feel, but you're the mayor. You know, you shouldn't have to sign
up
to speak in open forum.
They have their rules, and you know, they have their rules, and I tried to
respect. Are they respecting your rules? Are they respecting the city's rules?
No, obviously not. But, you know, I'm the mayor. I think I get blamed for everything, and I need to try harder than anybody because everybody talks to me. Almost everybody in the city talks to me with their complaints and whatever. And as mayor, I have to try to decide what's best for the city. And, you know, and every decision I've made has been about the safety of people, you know. And so whether it was to close the camp, or whether it was to try to keep a very low-key police presence during a great demonstration last Wednesday, I make each decision based on what's going to keep my community the safest. And there are a lot of people on extremes of all sides that are going to criticize me. They either close the camp tomorrow or never close the camp ever. You know, neither of those things can happen. I think that, you know,
neither thing can happen. You can't close it tomorrow, but you can't leave it forever. That's
yes,
what you mean?
Exactly.
So what do you do?
I'm starting and continuing the dialogue. So you asked me, the original question was, how do I talk to the camp? I talk to the camp by trying to have some messages tweeted. We put out daily leaflets and bulletins. They apparently are reading my bulletins. Some of them have signed up to my Facebook page. You know, so it's clearly, and, you know, I have...
They're right outside. We're tweeting each other,
right,
but
right,
we're a few
right,
feet
right,
of...
Right, right. And, you know, and I actually have a lot of friends in the movement who talk to me, although under the current rules, they can't talk to me officially. Right?
Well, whose rules?
Under the camp's current rules.
Under the camp is telling your friends they can't talk to you?
The camp has a rule right now that no one can speak on behalf of the camp unless the General Assembly approves it. And if you know anything about their General Assemblies, you need 90% approval. So it's very difficult for them to approve anybody to even to talk to us. But the reality is, because of what's happening, people are trying to talk because I think most of the people in the 99% movement don't want to hurt a city like Oakland. And so, you know, I'm a mayor who's just cut $30 million out of the budget. I have a tax initiative that's probably not going to make it that would have allowed me to restore some of those cuts. I have laid off 500 people in the last few years. We've had every worker give back 10% of their pay and make major reforms in their pension plans. And I've closed senior center hours. We've kept them all open, but we just keep them open long enough for the seniors to have lunch in the city. I've cut half of our parks people. This is a city that's really hurting. So when I'm spending thousands of hours down here to take care of the damage and the graffiti, that's city parks in neighborhoods that aren't being fixed. When I have to have police down here, that's neighborhoods that we're not patrolling, keeping them safe. It is very, very, very tough, and I think the Occupy movement is going to – it's not just Oakland this is happening. It's really happening across the country from what I can read, that the Occupy movement has to figure out is just the camping it, or is there are there other things?
Can I ask you about specifically October 25th? There is now – I think a lot of the resentment out there and among people watching this from a distance is over police conduct, rightly or wrongly. The ACLU of Northern California says they want these logs about use of violence. They say the police department's stonewalling them. Where's the transparency here? Can people get some of those documents that, like the ACLU are asking for?
Well, there's different. That's a wide, too wide of a spectrum, so I don't know which cases, whatever.
Specifically, they're asking for, I mean, there are some letters going back and forth right now between the ACLU and the police department about violence law or use of force logs for that night, October 25th.
Well, let me back up. Everything eventually is going to be public, right? It got lost, I think, in all of the clamor. And as soon as I got back from Washington the next day, we said that we were going to hire an independent investigator to investigate the use of force. Oakland.
October 25th or November 3rd?
Now, throughout all of the incidents. Oakland, at the beginning of the Iraq War, had a horrible incident down at the Port of Oakland, and I was one of the council members trying to keep the peace then. And as a result of that, we changed our use of force and crowd control policies. And so if those have been violated, I'm not happy about that, and neither is the police chief.
Well, you're the one who can find out most quickly, probably. You can
get those documents right now, and people are actually asking for them. Well, actually, the fastest way I can do that is hire an investigator, and we're in the process of doing that now to independently look at all of those documents very, very carefully and quickly. And so we're going to do that. We've been looking at people to hire.
You think that would be faster than just, I mean, they're public records.
You know, it's more complicated than that. You don't even want to go into all the union contracts and whatever about what can be, what employee things can be let go at what time. It's more in California. It's not so simple. Okay. You've got contractual issues. You've got some court cases, et cetera. The fastest way for me as the mayor to find out what happened is to hire a police investigator who's independent from my own police force and to investigate it. Because we have rules against rubber bullets. We have crowd enforcement rules that we thought were pretty good. I will probably in a separate panel have those all reviewed to see if they're good enough, right? But no one here is happy about any incident where the rules that we set up on crowd control or use of force have been violated.
Do you believe that? Do you have reason to believe that your own rules, the city's own rules, were violated?
I've seen some videos that seem to indicate that, but, you know, that's why I actually want an investigator to look at it.
Let me ask you about politics. I'm an outsider and don't know Oakland very well, but this recall effort now tied up with this Occupy thing, I'm seeing some pretty professionally printed up recall Quan flyers floating around among the handmade cardboard signs out there. Who stands to gain from this recall effort, do you think?
I've been really honest that I haven't spent much time thinking about that because we're really in a situation where I'm trying to make sure that downtown Oakland is safe. You know, I'm a progressive. I've been a long-time progressive. I'm the city's first woman mayor. I believe in community policing. I believe in clean and transparent government. I beat a candidate who probably outspent me by $2 million. And so that is one of the ironies. A lot of the progressive and community groups are coming up and saying, you know, you should think twice about who might be behind the recall. But I haven't had time to even pull together my own friends on that issue. My issue is really trying to make sure that the city moves forward, that we resolve this issue downtown. You know, the people of the city have to judge me on what I've done. I've probably been the most public mayor that they've had in a long time. I've had citywide community hearings with over 3,000 people attending it. We just recently had a pretty large meeting on community policing. That is how you have not just police, but you also have community services and prevention and intervention services to deal with crime. 1,000 people came to that. You know, I am probably the most grassroots mayor the city's ever seen. And I come from a lot of the constituencies of this community, immigrants, progressive women, and people who believe in participatory democracy. So
let me ask the
people will have to judge me on that.
Well, then let me ask you the question a different way, which I think is what you're getting at. What were, if the recall effort were successful, what do you think the consequences would be from the point of view of people out on that square right now? You know, what would you say to people thinking about recall Kwan? What would you say the consequence might be if they succeeded in recalling Kwan?
Well, first of all, it can't happen for a while. It'll take a while, right? So I'm not even, I really can't even, there are obviously people.
I mean, what would they get instead of Kwan, do you think?
I don't even want to speculate on that.
Okay. Final question for you. I bet you're not going to give me a date or anything, but in your mind, do you have a deadline for this whole process? Is there a point, is there a horizon for you?
I'm not going to talk about that.
I'm not asking you to say when, but do you have a limit?
I'm not going to talk about it.